Are there? The chair's broken. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. Hello. Okay, good morning.
Down to one, is that it?
Okay. Okay, we are learning today, again, the Ner Mitzvah, part we're learning the Ner Mitzvah part 1, and this is our second installment on the Ner Mitzvah part 1. The Ner Mitzvah is the Maral Sefer on Chanukah, which, as we explained last time, is divided into it's one big essay, which is divided into two sub-essays. The first sub-essay is what we call Chelek Aleph, is about the Arba Malchiyos, the four kingdoms that control the Jewish people at different times in our history, post Sinai, post Yitzias Mitzrayim, the four kingdoms being the kingdom of Babel that destroyed the first Beis Hamikdash, the kingdom of Poras Umaday, that Persia that took over from them, where the story of Purim took place, the kingdom of Greece that began to cause us problems in the second Beis Hamikdash, the story of Hanukkah, our central focus in this work, and the kingdom of Edom of Rome of Esav that destroyed the second Beis Hamikdash, under whose authority we consider ourselves to still be. So that's a structure of looking at history, looking at the history of the world and of the Jewish people, that is ubiquitous in the writings of Chazal, starting actually pre-Chazal in the Nevuah, in the prophecy of Daniel explicitly, and hinted to all over the place. And that's what the first part is about. The second part is more particularly about Hanukkah. Last week, we learned about the basic idea of there being Arba Malchios. We did not get into the real details of what those Arba Malchios were, what they represent, why each one is associated with a specific quality. But we spoke about the general outline of the idea of there being Arba Malchios. And the Arba Malchios are the four periods, the four things that during their period they eclipse the Jewish people, they remove or at least subordinate in the world, they remove from or subordinate in the world, that's better than remove from, they subordinate the presence of Hashem as it would be manifest in the Jewish people. And so they are represented by all kinds of things. Specifically, we reference that the description of the world before even the original presence of light of Hashem came into the world. So it describes there as well four pieces, which Chazal see as hinting to the four Malchias, because the world without the presence of Hashem Yisbarach, as seen through the Bnei Yisrael, as seen through the Jewish people, is tayu v'avayu. It's empty. It's not developed. It's not fulfilled. It's not refined. And as he went on, he spoke about the idea that the Dalet, the four, is because when we speak about the physical world, we speak about its four dimensions, its four sides, its four poles, arba kanfei sa'aretz. Out and in? Okay. When we speak about it, we speak about the four dimensions, the four corners of the earth. That's representative. The Dalet is representative of the physical world. And in there is supposed to be the Yud that's in the Dalet. Remember, the Yud is representative of the single, the spiritual essence of Kal Yisrael, of Olam Haba. That's why Kibukah Hashem Tzurei Lamim, this world is created with a hay, which is a Dalet, a physical world with content, with the presence of Hashem in it. When the Dalet prevails, when the physical prevails, that's the Arba Malchias, that's the four kingdoms. Okay, so again, we discussed other things, it's a broader subject, significant subject, but that was the basic outline that we learned about last time. I'll just put in a couple of little notes while we're waiting for come in Houston. And that is that in the dream that we have of these Arba Chayes, of these four animals that are there in the dream of Daniel, they come in from the sea. And we spoke about the idea that the sea, as the Maharal teaches here, and expanded upon it, is that the yishuv, the settlement of the world, is the dry land. The sea is the wild, right, where people aren't meant to be settled. And it's when those chayas that aren't supposed to be those that control the world come into the dry land, that's when we have trouble. And the Medrash said on that Maimer of Daniel that it's good when they come in from the sea, because sea creatures can't last on the dry land too long. So it's a good thing, it's a good sign when that's where they're coming from, as opposed to coming from the chursha, coming from the forests, where wild animals could come from, and then they could stay on the, you know, as long as they want. They could survive outside of the forest. Okay. You know what? What I'm going to suggest is we'll do a phone call.
Okay.
And then you know, maybe click him, we'll do a phone call. I could put the phone here. And if you want, you can still try to get in the video, but it's not a steer, it's not a contradiction.
Should he call you here, or do you want to call his number?
He can call 764-7356. A commercial for turtle wax. Okay. Okay, so just one other thing here is that and we'll be speaking about this some more, but I think I can risk.
Restart on the line.
Okay, gonna risk because we spoke about last time is that in the Nevuah, in the Chalom rather, in the dream of Daniel, when he envisioned the Arba Malchios, they were in the image of animals. When Nebuchadnezzar envisioned the Arba Malchios, it was a big structure of a person, and it had four different parts: a gold head, silver top, torso, and so on and so forth. So he says that we have to realize that the idea is the absence of the yud, it's the absence of the spirit from the physical world. And we see that as being Adam, what the human being is supposed to be. Less than that, when the other malchios control, that's they appear like a behemoth. They appear like animals, lacking the tzelem Elokim. That's the way it was. That's the way it appeared to Daniel. However, to Nebuchadnezzar, who was not sensitive to this difference, so it appeared as Adam. It appeared as people. Hello.
Okay, we're here.
Okay, I'm sorry. So for now, we'll do audio and see if it gets to work.
Perfect.
Okay, so we're just now going over, just getting ready to get started on the new phase. And we're just reviewing that when Daniel envisioned the Arba Malchios, he saw them as animals, which we learned last time. The idea is because since it's the physical dimension without the spiritual dimension, the Dalid without the Yud, so therefore it's lacking the quality of a human being, of Tzelem Elokim, of the divine image, that's lacking humanity. Anything less than that, we see a person not realizing their divine component, a world not realizing its divine component, is not even human. However, Nebuchadnezzar, in his dream, saw the Arba Malchios in the image of a person with various component parts. And so, because he wasn't sensitive to the need for this Tzelem Elokim. That's why he saw it that way. And this is an important nekuda, a very important point, which is going to be really, to a great degree, the foundation for a lot of what we're going to talk about today. Not the details that we're going to talk about today. The details we're going to, Amir Tashem, be speaking about are the details of what the elements of the Arba Malchios specifically are. What those four components of the four Malchios, what is the east, west, north, and south of the Malchios, of the kingdoms that stand to eclipse HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what that's about. But in terms of the entire vision of it, this point is essential. Because when we look at the Arba Malchios and their picture of a human being, right, with, again, with a head of gold, with a torso of silver, with different legs of copper, and so on and so forth, whatever exactly the vision was, they saw a picture of a human being. Does a picture of a human being necessarily involve the Tzelem Elokim? Does it necessarily involve the divine image? Tell me something. Somebody who doesn't believe in a divine soul, somebody who doesn't see a divine soul, which includes many of us who believe in a divine soul, when we look at the person as a whole, you still see a structure of a human being. You still see significant things, including things which aren't exactly present by animals, with regard to animals, and certainly not on the level that it's present with the human being. And the Arba Malchios are there for human power, but we see them as something less than what a human being was meant to be. We see this not as the fulfillment of the mitzvah of be all you can be. The human being, with the Tzelem Elokim, has it. Without it, is, again, in our vision, in Daniel's vision, it's the mus behema. It's the image of the animal. But in the vision of Nebuchadnezzar, he's still seeing the sophistication of the human being, and to a great degree, as we will see, to some degree, especially when it comes to Yavan, especially when it comes to the story of Hanukkah and the battle of the Jews against the Greeks, this is really the turning point of the issue. In order to see the greatness of the human being, is there something beyond that which Nebuchadnezzar, that which these kings could see as part of a great, sophisticated, smart, intelligent human being? Is there this higher portion called the Tzelem Elokim? Okay, with that introduction, let's proceed a little bit further in the Maral. So Nebuchadnezzar's dream saw the Arba Malchios as components of a person, and as we said, the head was didahav tav, was of pure gold, chadoi v'daroi dikesaf, its chest and its arms, in other words, the top of the torso, was of silver, me'ohi v'yarchesei dinachash, and the stomach and the thighs were of copper, and then the legs, shakoi diparzel, and the legs were made out of steel. Okay, so iron. So that's the basic structure. That's the basic structure of the person. Okay, we're back on there. Okay, so that was what he saw. And again, and that's the fullness of a human being, the way they saw it, and that represents the four Malchios. I'm at page Chav Gimel. I'm just looking at page Chav Gimel here in the Hartman edition of it. Now, at the same time, right, we want to match up your dreams here, okay? What's Nebuchadnezzar's? What's Nebuchadnezzar's vision of the dream? What's Nebuchadnezzar's vision of the dream? We're having vision problems here. Nebuchadnezzar's vision of the dream. I'm sorry, Daniel's vision of the dream. Okay, we're talking about visions and dreams. We're having we're having an easier time with audio.
Yeah, let's just stick with audio for the rest.
Okay. So we'll have audio and we'll have dreams about seeing each other. So The two images that we have to here reconcile is in the terms of the four Goliaths, again, is that Nebuchadnezzar sees a human being with a head of gold, arms and chest of silver, and then midsection, stomach and thighs of copper, and then legs of iron. And Daniel sees a lion with eagle's wings, followed by a bear, followed by a leopard, and then followed by this monster, this animal that's just can't be classified in any direction, all kinds of things to it. Those are the parallel images of the Arba Goliaths. And in order to understand what the four Goliaths are about, we have to divide it up. And the division which the Maharal is going to use is, of course, going to be capably represented by both sides. When it comes to the human being, its component to the human being, he's not going to focus so much on where the head is and where the chest is and so on and so forth. He's not going to focus so much on that as much as he's going to focus on the different precious metals that represent the different kingdoms. But first, let's speak about what the Maharal speaks about, which is the four components within a human being that these four Malchios could represent, separate and apart from the divine component. And the way the Maharal expresses it here, and we've come across this other times, and this is a common theme in the Maharal, is that the person has three driving forces, three specific driving forces within the person. There's the Koyach HaGuf. There's the power of the body itself. Physicality. The drive of physicality. Of physical appetites, etc. There's the Koyach HaSeichel. There's the drive of the intellect. Of the mind. Of what the head says to do. Not what the stomach says to do. Or the Kaved in the language of Chazal, the liver. Right? But what the Moyach, what the mind says to do. And then there is the Koyach Nafshi. Okay, so we have Koyach Gufni, the physical power, the Koyach Sichli, the mind's power, and the Koyach Nafshi. The Koyach Nafshi is what we would call the heart's power. In other words, what ultimately the person is moved and is passionate to do. If you recall, as recently as when we were learning the Nesiv HaTshuva, we spoke about these three components. We spoke about, the stomach and midsection being the physical driver, the head being the repository of the intellectual driver, mind over matter, and the heart being the monkey in the middle that can be pulled by the mind, where you're passionate about those things which are the wisest and best for you to do, or, heaven forbid, pulled by the stomach and the loins, where you are passionate and driven just by the things which satisfy you physically. But ultimately, the power that drives a human being is the Koyach Nafshi, is the heart and whatever it chooses to be passionate about. It could be passionate because of the Koyach HaSeichel, because of the intellect. It could be passionate because of the stomach. Those are three. The fourth, of course, is when instead of looking at them as component parts, we look at the human being as a whole. Human being ultimately is just one person. The Rambam in the Shmoyna Prakim, in his introduction to Pirkei Avos, brings a debate, which the Ramban quotes in Chumash and Parshas Bereishis, whether a human being has multiple souls, right? Each one, operating in a different sphere. To make the move. And he says, no, ultimately, Vayhi Adam L'Nefesh Chaya, it all belongs to one thing. There's one life force of the person. You can divide it up. Lahavdil, like with the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, where we speak, as we discussed last week, of Yud Gimel Midais, of 13 attributes, but it's still really one Rebbeinu Shel Olam. And Rebbeinu Shel Olam, we can't even really divide it up. Even the 13 is Gematria Echad, as we discussed. But even in a human being, it's also that way. There are the parts, and there's the sum of the parts. There's the whole, which is greater than the sum of the parts, as even the Maharal is going to discuss. So those are the four. And how do they correspond to the Malchios. They correspond to the four kingdoms simply as follows. Bavel was considered to be Choshev, the most powerful, in a certain sense, amongst the Malchios. In a certain sense, the most powerful amongst the Malchios. Of course, in other ways, Edom is more powerful. Edom is the totality. Bavel was the first one to destroy a Beis Hamikdash, was the first one to conquer the Jewish people after Mitzrayim and Sinai, after we really became God's people. The real, real strength. Bavel is compared to the lion, who is also having on his back the wings of eagles. Right? The lion is king of the beast. The eagle flies higher than all the other birds. That's why it carries its young on its back. Right? That's al kanfei nesharim. Hashem carries us like on the wings of eagles. As Rashi explains, other birds, they don't really know exactly what to do because, you know, they can, if they carry their birds in their feet, somebody can get them from beneath. If they carry them from above, then the eagle can get them. But the eagle knows nobody flies higher than an eagle. So therefore it carries its young on its back comfortably and securely. Right? So they're on top. There's a certain great strength to the kingdom of Nebuchadnezzar. And that's why it's the lion. That's why it's gold. Gold is chashuv. Gold is there as something which is extremely significant. And it's the significance of that malchus that's represented there. The koyach nafshi, the heart, that which drives. Parasumadai is compared to a bear. The Gemara discusses the bear is hungry. The bear is anxious. The bear is pacing back and forth. The Gemara says, "Eichlim v'sh." The Parsiim are compared to the bear because they're eichlim v'shaisim k'dayv. They eat and they drink like a bear. Misurvalim b'basar k'dayv. They seem to be wrapped in a blanket of flesh like a bear. Right? Megadlim seyar k'dayv. They grow their hair like a bear. Just, you know, very, very physical description. And that's what Parasumadai was considered comparable to. Very hungry. The Gemara says in Megillah, in the Agadah and Megillah, why was he called Achashverosh? Because everyone became Rosh. Everyone became impoverished in his day. Why? Because it always says, you know, one of the frequent refrains in Megillah Esther is that Achashverosh put Mas al Haaretz. He imposed taxes on the land. He was constantly imposing taxes. His appetite to swallow things up, to have what everybody could have from people, that is characteristic of Achashverosh. Even when it came to the Jewish people, Haman knew to speak the language. He said, I'm going to give you 10,000 bricks of silver, right, whatever it is, Seres Halofim Kikar Kesef, you know, to be able to have the Jews. So yes, the Maral says, Achashverosh in a certain sense ultimately gave it back to Haman because it wouldn't look so good, you know, that he sold a nation for 10,000 bricks of silver. But he took it, he held it, he caressed it, and then he gave it back to Haman. You know, it was just like the hunger for money and for property and for food and for everything else. I mean, Achashverosh's appetites are well on display in Megillas Esther. And that's a characteristic of Parasumadai. And that's like the bear, right? The bear, who's, you know, interested in that. And that's characteristic of silver. Right? Silver is the collection of money, right? Is greed. That's how that matches that. Even the term kesef has a different meaning in Hebrew. You know what it is? It's kosef, to yearn, right? To desire, to want. Right, that's what they represent, and that's the koyach gufni. That's of course the physical driver. That's the driver of the kaved, of the liver, of the stomach, of the midsection, of all the physical appetites. They represent that part of the person. And then there's the third, and the third is the nomer, is the leopard, and the leopard represents the kingdom of Yavan. And copper represents the kingdom of Yavan. Now, what's the idea here? How does this work? What's Yavan represent? It's supposed to represent the Keach Sichli. Right? Remember when you see all these, are you following all these parallel structures which we have over here? We have four kingdoms: Bavel, Paras U'Madai, Yavan, and Edom. We have four animals. We have the bear, the lions. We have the bears. We have, it almost sounds like a Sunday during football season, right? We have the leopards, and then we have the monster, right? That beast that's bigger than anything. You're welcome to take your regular seat. please come. And then we have the metals, right? We have the gold, we have the silver, we have the copper, and we have the iron. And then now what the Maharal has done is we also have the four components of the person. And the four components of the person are the heart, right? The Keach Nafshi, the physical drive, the intellectual drive, and then the totality of the person as a whole. And so we have all these fours, and we have to elegantly wrap them together. Right? Thank the Lord for the Maharal. That's how the Maharal puts it together. Okay, so far, what have we matched up? We've matched up Bavel, that very significant kingdom, as the Keach Nafshi, the soul which drives the person, the heart which drives the person as a whole, compared to the lion with the eagle's wings, compared with gold of significance. Then we've had the silver, the bear, the Persians with their appetites, just appetites, desires, as on display in the story of Ahasuerus, collecting money. Silver is money, and like the bear that's just, you know, devouring, passing the survol and basar kedayv, you know, wrapped in flesh like a bear, and that represents the kayach gufni, the physical drive, the stomach and midsection of the person. And now what we're up to is we're up to Yavan, which is, of course, our critical study here in Ner Mitzvah, but in this essay it's only part of the study, but is Yavan. And Yavan seems to be the trickiest one, because on the one hand it represents the Keach Sichli. Now we understand that. Greek wisdom is a term. If we speak about driven by the mind, Greek wisdom is a term. The intellectual accomplishments of the Greeks, the intellectual curiosity of the Greeks, is huge and is going to figure very largely in our discussions about the Yavanim and about the story of Hanukkah. So when it comes to the structure which the Maharal has suggested of, well, the four Malchios correspond to the four components of a human being, that's easy. The Keach Sichli, the intellect, corresponds to Yavan. But when it comes to these images of leopards and copper, it gets a little trickier. What's that got to do? Is a leopard particularly cunning? Is a leopard known for its strength? No. For its wisdom? No. What do we know a leopard for? Heve az kanomer. You're supposed to be brazen like a leopard. Interestingly, beautifully, in the pasuk in Mishlei, hang on, I'll get you the exact address. In the pasuk in Mishlei, it also uses the term of a brazen forehead, the forehead of one who is audacious, and it says that it is nechusha. It is copper. Copper also represents azus, brazenness. Exactly why? Tzarich biur. But it's used that way. Here it is. Yeshaya, Memches Dalid, Umitzchech Nechusha. Right? It's considered to be strong, you know, a strong metal, and so on and so forth, copper. So it's mitzrech nechusha, a copper forehead, right? That's brazenness. Azus, representative of Azus Panim. So those are, there you see a connection, but what's the connection of that to wisdom, to that kinyan? And the Maral explains that we have a notion which says, loy habayshon lamed. Right? A baishon, a person who's embarrassed can't learn. Now it's an interesting thing. It's all together, those of you who know, who learn Pirkei Avos, you know that one, it's a very interesting thing, the relationship of Azus and Busha, good thing, bad thing. On the one hand, the Mishnah says a Baishan cannot learn, right? Negative thing. And the Mishnah goes on and it says, Az Panim Ligehenim, Baishas Panim Liganeden. A person who has Azus Panim, who has a brazenness of their face, is to hell. Baishas Panim, a person who has a modesty of the face, a shame of the face, is Liganeden, is to Ganeden. So one has to reconcile. There's times where we praise, and there's times when we deeply, deeply negate and you know, Azus. And the same thing with Busha, which are in a sense two opposites. When it comes to Torah learning, we are very negative about being a Baishan. And the idea of a Baishan there, a person who's too embarrassed, right? Simply the idea is you don't ask, right? You won't know, you won't learn. But it represents a lack of aggressiveness, a lack of aggressive pursuit. And to be able to learn, there has to be an aggressive pursuit. The Gemara says explicitly, the Torah was given to the Jewish people. Why? Because we are azin. We have this sort of, this aggressiveness. And that means that makes it very suitable for the gaining of Torah. Not Azus Panim, which is a negative sort of a lip, a chutzpah, a brazenness of the face, a boldness that's ugly, but an Azus which is positive. So the way the Maral explains it very simply is as follows. The body for itself is lethargic, right? Feeds itself into couch potato mode, right? To just have, to take, to sit, to eat, to sleep. When we speak about you know, doing things, taking things on, so then we get into this mind over matter thing. The mind doesn't have the limitations. What holds us back from doing what we really want to do? Go ahead and proceed to do. I want to be able to go and be running 5K every Sunday. I want to be able to be doing these things. Yeah, I know, but Dunkin' Donuts calls. You know, it's like, you know, that's the contrast. Wisdom is not for itself. Pure wisdom is only limited by physicality that holds it back. Wisdom is the shooting ahead, is the strength, is the aggressiveness, is the readiness for pursuit. Physicality is passive. Physicality is subject to hispalus, to being acted upon. It sits there. The mind is what provides the tzura, is what provides the shape. Right? You have Chaymer and Tzur, right? That division which we always learn about and talk about in the writings of the Maral. Chaymer is the ball of Play-Doh, the raw material. Tzura is the shape which you give it. You mold it into a bowl, into a teacup, into whatever it is. What are you doing? The material just sits there like a blob, passively. And using your mind as displayed in your fingers, you plan and you develop and you shape it. The tzura, the mind, acts upon things. The chaymer, the physicality, is passive and is acted upon. Wisdom is az. It's strong, it's aggressive, it changes things. Physicality is passive. It sits, it bloats, it rests. It's affected by other things, but it doesn't affect things. It doesn't move forward, it doesn't grow things. Yavon was this great intellectual empire, this great empire of Chachma, of wisdom, of Chachma Yavonis. They are represented by the Az, by the Azus of the leopard, by the Azus of the copper, the strength of the copper. I don't know, you know, metallics or whatever the there's a term for the study of metallurgy, right? I don't know to compare what the different qualities of these things are. You know, the Azus of it, I'm sure there somebody could find some understanding of it that would fit with this, but I don't have it. He's not marach on it here. Maybe there's a note that I missed. I missed many notes, but maybe there's a note about this that I missed, about exactly what it is. But for now, I cannot tell you. Yeah.
Isn't that one of the also the qualities Rabbi Megillah mentions about the bear, that they love to sleep like a bear? I mean, that's even like our
right
model of a hibernating bear. They spend all
right
the time just
right, like right. Very good. Right, right.
All right. So usually, I think copper's mixed. It's not pure like silver and gold, and it's brass or it's bronze. You know, it's made stronger than it appears, you know, in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And since it's not as valuable,
where do you see that? Where do you see that in the Torah? It's like that.
In
the Mishkan, we deal with pure nechoshes.
Nechoshes, copper itself is nechoshes. Actually, translated sometimes as bronze.
I don't know. I mean, I thought it was copper. Whatever it is, whatever the word nechayshus is there, it is here.
Uh-huh.
So it's the same word. So.
Just a thought, maybe nechayshus is nachash. He was the most Aram beast.
Clever. Very good.
Unbelievably.
Interesting. High. Very nice. Okay. Requires exploration. Very good. Okay. Nechayshus, nachash, nachash, nechayshus. Even have, and that's he was Oru Mikoel. He had the greatest animal wisdom, and here we're dealing with Yavon being represented by Nechayshes, which is the greatest wisdom that's before the wisdom of the Tzelem Elokim. Beautiful, excellent. Okay, so this is the picture then of Yavon and their wisdom, and their kingdom again matching all of these things. Now what we're gonna do here is I'm gonna just jump out of order a little bit of the Maral to go on to Malchus Revius, and then we'll come back to dwell a little bit more on the Yavon piece, because again that's really central to why this essay is being brought here. Maral spends more time talking about it, and Amir Tashem, so will we. Yeah.
The part for the body, the silver, was in the mid section.
No. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Maral doesn't speak so much. He aligns it more in terms of the metals than anything else. The gold is the golden head. The silver is like here, the top part of the torso. The copper is the stomach and below. Now we would have rather have had, you know, the copper representing wisdom in the exact opposite place. Maral doesn't address that. He just speaks about it as it's a human being as a whole, and it's progressive. So you start from the top to the bottom, right? And focus, instead of focusing on the part of the body that represents, because there is a matter of chronology here, it's gold, silver, copper. Iron. Iron is the legs. Yeah.
This is an interesting picture. I mean, not the way around saying, but like, you know, it puts the focus on the head and then going downwards, like gold is the best metal, and then, you know, downward like that. It's just an interesting picture of a person putting the focus, and when you're talking about it in a negative connotation, you're putting the focus in the proper order, really.
In a certain sense, yes. Again, the parts of the body, as far as I know, the Maral does not deal with, and there are obvious first glance questions which come up, and I don't know how he deals with it or why he doesn't deal with it, but he doesn't seem to deal with it. Okay, now the fourth is is the Malchus of Edom, which the Malchus of Edom is this monster, the way it's portrayed in the dream, and that's really the totality, right? In terms of corresponding to the human being, it's the totality of the whole being, of the person together as one. And the idea is that when you bring it all together, the Maharal connects it importantly, and this is a say the Maharal speaks about in different places, to the power of Dibur, Koyach HaDibur. Right, when you speak about a human being, even a human being without a Tzelem Elokim, what distinguishes a human being over an animal is the power of speech. And the power of speech employs every one of the three components. Right? It uses physical tools, the tongue and the lips, so that's the Koyach Gufni. It uses, obviously, the Koyach Sichli, the intelligence, that's going to be on display in what you speak about, and that's what, in a certain sense, distinguishes, in a certain first-glance sense, distinguishes the speech of man. And, of course, it's the Ruach, it's the spirit, it's the breath that actually drives the speech, that makes it happen. So the Koyach HaDibur is something that brings it necessarily all together, all the different components together, and that's representative in a certain sense of this Malchus Revius that represents the totality of everything that's being brought together. And excuse me, jump ahead to find for you the part where the Maharal speaks about this, and find for you and find for me. Yeah, Mem Zayin is it. And he says, V'oidra Daniel Chai Revius, page Mem Zayin, V'hi Mishnei Mikol Chiyusa. And we say is because that's the combination of all the three other components of the person. And right here he brings this idea of the Koyach HaDibur, of the power of speech, and he says, "Lakach ro Daniel Chaya Dalad Mishuna Mikol HaChayos," and that's why the fourth is different than all of them, because it has Yeshbo Shel Elu Gimel Koyachos VeYikolel Kol Gimel. He says, since it's something which is a composite of all three, something which is not really found so simply amongst the behemos, so it represents this new monster that's just doesn't have a parallel in that way in the animal kingdom. And he doesn't speak so much here about the barzel, about the metal, which is the legs on the bottom, in explaining this. However, he brings what Chazal say, which is that the last of them is the fiercest of them all, Zu Edom. And Chazal say, Daniel roa shloshtam belayla echad lazu belayla echad. When Daniel had the vision, he actually saw one night the three dreams of the three kingdoms, and then on a separate night he had the dream about the monster, the fourth kingdom. So Rav Yechon and Rish Lakish both commented on this. Rav Yechon said, Sheshkula keneged shloshtam, because it's parallel, it's equal to all three. It's the combination of all three. And Rish Lakish said, it's even greater than all three. And the idea is, because, says the Maharal, because the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. This is when you're looking at the entirety, the wholeness of the person. He says, each Malchus has its own particular Mida, has its own particular strength. But when you look at the Malchus Revius, what it's trying to do is it's trying to be everything. When you look at many of the examples, which we have the illustrations of Malchus Revius, of the fourth kingdom, right? For example, in the War of the Four Kings, so the fourth one, the first one was the king of Shinar, of Babel, the second one was the king of Elam, was the king of Elasar, which is Madai, right, and then Elam, which is Yavan, and then the last one is Melech Goyim. the king of the nations, because that's their power. And in fact, in history we see the conquest of the Roman Empire, right, how it would bring together all of the kingdoms in this sense, the wide tremendous spread of Christianity in the Roman Empire, and how it does that. That's broadly how it is seen, and Maharal discusses this some more, but this is sort of the completion of the picture of the four kingdoms. But let's go back now to dwelling upon the third of those kingdoms, because we're learning this in anticipation of Chanukah. The kingdom that's the Malchus that we have to deal with on Chanukah is Malchus Yavan, the Malchus of wisdom, and this is therefore the point of focus that the Maharal, you know, departs a little bit from just discussing generally and speaks about here.
Did he explain why it's iron?
No, as I said, he doesn't really dwell much on why it's iron, at least again to the extent I know. Yavan represents wisdom, and Yavan's challenge to the Jewish people was specifically about the wisdom that's the Yud, the wisdom that's not the Dalet, but the wisdom that's the Hey, the wisdom that's the portion that we call divine wisdom. And Chazal make a famous drasha on the Megillas Eicha, right? Malkavis Areh Bagayim Ein Taira. We go, we travel amongst the nations, Ein Taira. There's no Taira there. Why, says the Gemara, if a person will say there's Chachma Bagayim, there's wisdom amongst the nations, you better believe it. But if a person will say that there's Taira amongst the nations, don't believe it. Taira is the unique Mayrosh Achilas Yaakov, is the unique heritage of the Jewish people. Taira is in the realm of wisdom, but at the same time it's a different realm of wisdom. As we learned extensively in the Tiferes Yisrael, Taira is, obviously, the divine wisdom. It's the peace of the upper world that's brought down into the lower world, and how the Maharal discussed there at length how it's not such an easy shidduch, it's not such an easy welcome, it's not such an easy match. The Yavanim, who were very focused on wisdom, and the wisdom that they, as non-spiritual beings, pursuing wisdom from the power of the capacity of human intellect in an earthy sense, they didn't really want to accept or make room for anything more. That's why they wanted to swallow up the Torah of the Jewish people. Who was the first commission translation from the outside of the Torah? Was Talmai, who wanted to have the Torah, Ptolemy wanted to have the Torah translated into Greek. And to some degree that's respected and recognized by Chazal. There's a value that we put on the Greeks. A translation of the Torah into Greek has a higher status, halachically, as the Mishnah discusses in Maseches Megillah, than others. Because the Greeks' wisdom and their curiosity about the Torah is not only a weakness, it's a strength. They see themselves as in a neighboring discipline to the Torah. Now, of course, as the Maharal says, an uman is sine es ben umnasai. Every craftsman has a certain special feeling, and not a positive one, towards its competitor. And so the Greeks have an interest and a competition with the wisdom of the Jews. And so what's the characteristic of Golus Yavan? Is it the physical threat which is posed to the Jewish people by the Greeks? No. The physical threat to the Jewish people by the Greeks is incidental. If they are refusing to do X, Y, and Z, then we're going to kill them. Right? The desire wasn't to kill them. The desire was to co-opt them. The main thing was the gzeira of l'hashkicham tayrasecha u'lavira mechukei ritzaynecha, to make the Jewish people forget the Torah, to write out of the mix a wisdom that has a divine peace, and to instead have it only and completely dominated by very earthy, physical wisdom, material wisdom. That's the arena of conflict. So they're both, Klal Yisrael are called Azim, because driven by the mind is not driven by the sluggishness of physicality. But there's driven by the mind over matter, right? People who, with their minds, drive themselves and will be running up and down the street, right? Running up and down the tracks, training themselves, and that's definitely a triumph in a certain sense of the mind. And then there's the triumph of the mind as in the spirit. The seichel, that's part and parcel of the tzelem elokim, of the divine image. And that's what the Greeks came to attack and to undermine. That was what their conflict was with the Bnei Yisrael, with the Jewish people. They wanted to separate Klal Yisrael from their divine roots and maintain an earth, a world, where there's such a thing as a human being, and a human being reigning supreme, and all that can make a human being reign supreme over everything else in the world is intellect. But that's it. That's the ceiling. The top of the world is the top of the tallest Greek's head. Whereas for Klal Yisrael, your head is just trying to get wisdom from the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. It's all just about the connection to the heavens. But the Greeks want to break that. That's, in short, the way the Maharal describes this here. We're going to take a few minutes, I'm going to pause here for questions, but we take a few minutes to just discuss, in closing, a very famous chazal about the decree that makes a synopsis of the decree of the Greeks in a certain phrase, and the Maharal is going to explain that for us. It's a classic Hanukkah chazal, and the Maharal is going to explain that for us. But this is the concept. Before we look at that chazal, this is the concept. Questions or comments?
What is the source of the proposition that the Jews were accepted for the Torah because of their aggressive intellect, or their desire for wisdom?
It's a Gemara. The Gemara says in Maseches Beya, the Gemara says, here, I'm going to find you the exact quotation, but the Gemara says, why was the Torah given to the Jewish people? Because they are Azim. The Gemara in Beya, Daf Chafei Amud Beis, Mipneima Nitna Torah LeYisrael, Mipnei Shein Azin. Why was the Torah given to the Jewish people? Because they were Azin. Azin is this sort of the strongest aggressiveness. The Gemara goes on, brings Tanabi Rabbi Shmuel, that the Torah is called the fire, right, that comes from the right hand of Hashem. And we say that Klal Yisrael themselves are to some degree fiery. They need Ilmole Mitnan in a Torah Yisrael, Enkomu Lashni Chaylamim. Fire, likewise, is this, right? Fire is energy. When you think about the four elements of the world, you have the dust, you have the water, and you have the air, which is solids, liquids, and gases. And then what do you have? Afor, mayim, ruach, esh. What's esh? Esh is energy. What converts something from a solid to a liquid, or from a liquid to a gas? Is energy. Energy is that which acts on the rest. Right? Esh is the fire. Esh is the Torah. Esh is the tsura giver, the form giver, the structure giver to everything else. And that's what's described, Yisrael him azim umma, is this, you know, this way.
Maybe we could say, in the mind over matter, who beat the Persians was Mordechai, and instead of him, will come below Zah, his Zah, Az, his Azus, and his Az, the Kedusha beats. I think he was already using the Azus. The next Dallas, the third one, would be the Persian.
I hear. Nice. Yeah.
Looking from the point of view of Yavin, of the Greeks, the Yidden are saying that we respect your wisdom. We also, you know, that kind of Az. But there's this other wisdom, which is divine wisdom, which, you know, we were chosen and we can't have it. You can't understand it. I mean, we hold it not just that you won't find Torah by going, but they don't have access.
Cause right.
So, you're saying, or when I was saying, that Yemen's hostile to that. So we
correct.
You know, but, it's almost inevitable. So, you know, It may well be.
There could be such a thing. You understand that it could. There could be such a thing that they could choose to accept it. remember that the touchstone for the relationship between the Jews and the Greeks is that Shem, who is our grandfather, Yefes is their grandfather, and Chum, the third son of Noach, is Mitzrayim's grandfather. So Chum sees what's and Canaan's grandfather. Chum what sees his father, you know, in a compromised position, and he does a terrible thing. It's Canaan, Mitzrayim. You know, there's the Avadim, you know, slaves that just have to be subordinate. They have no sensitivity to the issue. Chum comes and tells them. Shem doesn't even try to speak to Chum. But Shem speaks to Yefes, and he says, let's go and help. And Yefes says, okay, I'll join you. So Shem has the inbred sensitivity, and Yefes is open to learn and to follow. When it turns around, and there's such a thing as Yaft Elokim Liyefes Vishkon Ba'olei Shem, they can potentially be brought. If there's interest in the Torah is a curiosity to gain and not to vanquish, then there may be room. There may be room, but that wasn't what it was in the story of Hanukkah.
Well, they had the upper hand, and they were the Malkus.
That's correct.
If they weren't, they would be.
Maybe. But this was the conflict. As it was, this was the conflict. So if I may, I'd like to just follow through with this Chazal, and briefly just say the Chazal. The Chazal, there's a famous Chazal which says, when it referring to Malchus Yavan, that says Yavan said to the Jewish people, "Kisvu lachem al keren hashar, ein lachem chelek be'elekei Yisrael." They said to the Jewish people, "Write for yourselves on the horn of the ox that you have no portion in the God of Israel." That's Yavan that says, "Kisvu lachem al keren hashar, ein lachem chelek ve'elekei Yisrael." This is the mantra of Yavan. Write that you have no portion in the God of Israel. So what does this mean, and what's the keren hashar? So when you think of a shar, what do you think of? And this is what's indicated in the Medrash. You think of the Egel Hazav, of the golden calf, that they were somehow harping on the golden calf. So the Maharal uses the opportunity to go and discuss a Gemara, or to explain this. He discusses a Gemara in Brachas, which we learned about in the Be'er HaGaila, his analysis of it. This is a similar analysis, not exactly the same, but a similar analysis, where the Gemara speaks about the Haftorah of Parshas Ekev, where Klal Yisrael says, Hashem has abandoned me and forgotten me, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds and says, can a woman forget her infant from loving, from feeling compassion for that which came from her stomach? Even if they could, I couldn't forget you. Gam eile tishkachna v'anechile yeshkachech. Right? So seemingly it's just a nice reassuring thing. The Jewish people are in Golos. We feel forgotten and abandoned by Hashem Yisbarach. Hashem says, a woman never forgets her child. And even if she would, I wouldn't forget you. Very nice, very reassuring. The Gemara in Brachas makes a much bigger deal out of it. And the Gemara analyzes it. The Maral actually discusses this in the Be'er HaGaila, in the section where he speaks about how Chazal's Midrashim sometimes seem to go way, 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 way beyond what the Pasuk is speaking about. Right? So the Maral explains this over there, and here as well. And the Gemara in Brachas says like this, that okay, so we'd be forgotten. So Hashem says, for a woman, Hatishkach Isha Ula, Merachem Ben Bitna, he says, can I forget the Oilais, the Korbonais Oila, and the Bechairais, Merachem, right? Rechem, Kaddish Merachem, and the Bechoros that you brought for me in the Midbar. I can't forget that. So Klal Yisrael says, if you have such a good memory, Rabbeinu Shalom, maybe you'll also remember the Egel Hazav. So Hashem says, no, Eile Tishkachna. What was the line by the Egel Hazav? Was Eile Elekecha Yisrael. I'll forget the golden calf. So he said, Hashem, if you have selective memory, maybe you'll forget that we accepted the Torah. Hashem says, Anoichi, I won't forget. Anoichi Le'ashkachech. So, it's really cute, very nice. What's the idea? I'm skipping part of the Gemara, a very important part of the Gemara, and part of what's being discussed here. But what's the ikar here? What's the punchline? Says the Maharal, just like an infant, just like a baby, what creates the bond between a mother and a child is the beginning. Right? The child grows inside the mother. The child is born through the birth canal of the mother. The child is nursed by the mother. Right? That beginning of connection is huge. It's huge. And for Klal Yisrael, those were the korbanos. That's what the korbanos that the Jewish people brought in the Midbar represents. We were born when we came out of Mitzrayim, goy mikerev goy. And we came out sacrificing. We came out offering. We came out bringing korbanos. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know, I can't forget the beginnings. That's the womb, you know, that's the birth. That's the beginning. That's what defined our connection. So Klal said, but one second, in the beginning, right after you gave us the Torah, we also did an Egel Azov. We brought a golden calf. Doesn't that undermine the relationship? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it's true, but Anoichi lo yeshkachech. What does that mean? So first of all, comes, says the Maral, that's what the Yevanim wanted to exploit. There was the Egel. The Egel was in the beginning, and it undermined the relationship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So they wanted to say, what, you think you're so connected to Hashem? Kitzvu lachem al keren asher she'en lachem chelik velikei Yisrael. Right on the horn of the ox, that you have no portion in the Elikei Yisrael. Says the Maral, but v'anaychi lo yashkachech. What's anaychi? This is a beautiful, beautiful thing from the Maral. Anaychi Hashem alaykech asher tzisicha meyat Mitzrayim beis avodim. Is that a commandment? There are 10 commandments. What's the first commandment? I am Hashem, your God. Right? Is that a commandment? Now, the 10 commandments is the name of a movie. Right? In the Torah, it's called the 10 Dibros.
Statements.
Or Dvorim. The 10 statements of Hashem. Most of them are mitzvahs. Is Anochi Hashem Elokecha a mitzvah? It's a machlokes rishonim. There's a debate amongst the rishonim whether Anochi Hashem Elokecha is a mitzvah. Because it doesn't tell you to do anything. It's a declaration. Maybe it's just a premise to the rest of the mitzvahs. I'm your God, now let me tell you what to do. I have 613 mitzvahs to give you. It's a machlokes rishonim, whether it's counted as a mitzvah or not. Even if it is a mitzvah, it's said not in a in a mandating form, but rather in a declarative form. I am Hashem, your God. Nothing to talk about. What does that mean? Says the Maharal, there's a connection which we have to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam because we make the connection. We bring korbanos. We do mitzvahs. We do all kinds of things to make a connection with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. That's the good news. The bad news is we don't always do those things. We don't always do the right things. Sometimes instead of bringing korbanos, olos, and bechoros to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, we build, we dance around, and we worship and bring korbanos to golden calves. What are you going to do with that? If mitzvah is what creates the relationship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it takes two to tango. If Klal Yisrael does the mitzvah, then the relationship is there. If not, not. Comes along the mitzvah of Anoichi Hashem Elokecha. That's not dependent on us. That's Him. He's saying, I'm your God. I'm your Lord. I'm connected to you. No ifs, no ands, no buts. It's not up to us. I am your God. The firmness of the connection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Klal Yisrael is established there. You can't shake that. The Egel was in a certain sense an exception of us shaking it off. Anoichi says, sorry Charlie, it doesn't happen. The Yevanim were trying to break our connection. They're going to fail ultimately because Anoichi Hashem Elokecha. And as the Navi says, you can abandon me, I'm going to force you back. I'm going to bring you back one way or the other, you'll come back. Now that sounds pretty terrible, but of course we say from Anochi Hashem Elokecha also the very positive part of that, which is, what does it mean Hashem's going to force us back? He's going to bring us back in shackles? No. But the time that thing is, even as we often make decisions to turn away and to do the wrong thing and turn away from Hashem, but we still feel what people call the pinta layid, we still feel the inherent connection, fact of life, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I'm your God. It's a connection you can't shake. Says the Maharal, the Yavanim believed that it could be shaken. The Yavanim were trying to undo that. They were trying to undo the connection between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and without that, then it's all just a world of wisdom, where again, the top of everything is the top of the highest Greek's head. Klal Yisrael has to fight back with recognizing Anochi Hashem Elokecha, recognizing the inherent connection of Klal Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just want to conclude with the notion that the Maharal says that we have to understand that we were zeicha to Anochi Hashem Elokecha because we said Naseh V'Nishma. He says Naseh V'Nishma is where you say we will do and we will hear, which means I don't have to make the decision first. I don't have to exercise my discrimination first. I don't have to figure it out first. Hashem, whatever you say, you define it. Giving ourselves over to Hashem defining us is Anochi Hashem Elokecha. It's up to Hashem that makes us the God, as opposed to the other way around. Mir Hashem, we will continue with this and speak about it some more next time. Okay, you get the idea? So what we learned today was, we went from speaking about the general idea of the four Malchios representing the physicality as opposed to the spirituality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to explaining what each component of the Malchios were, and to focusing in specifically on Yavan and their, from the Koyach HaSechel, their attempt to erase the connection between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a Sechel, an intellect, a mindfulness without a divine component. And that's what they tried to undermine, that's what they tried to create, and that's what in the story of Hanukkah we have to combat.
The Greeks didn't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu as HaKadosh Baruch Hu, didn't they just see it as the God of Israel? Because they were polytheists, they had a lot of different gods. So they said, oh, we're going to try to get you to not be related to your God, like this, you know, this other country, they're related to Jupiter, we're going to get them.
Right.
But
their main grounding wasn't in the other theisms as much as it was in the power of their own, in the power of their own intellect, the way it's did I just lose them over there in Houston? Yeah. So the thing is like this. Let me just want to say one housekeeping note, and we'll have to get. I think, is everybody here on the email list for the shiur? No. What? What?
I haven't gotten anything recently.
Okay, so then you're not. So then maybe write your names down. The thing is, I don't think we need this recorded for posterity. We are going to.